Hello and welcome to Eco Magazine's takeover of the Into the Blue podcast. I'm your host, Haley, and in the second part of this deep dive series, I'm joined by Virla Huvana to find out more about habitat mapping and the floor of the deep sea. Welcome, Virla. It's nice to meet you. Can you go ahead and just give us a little brief introduction about yourself and kind of how you became to do this kind of research?
I'm Virla Huvana. I work at the National Oceanography Center in Southampton. I'm a marine researcher, a research leader is the exact title. And how did I get to doing this research? Originally, I'm an environmental engineer or bioengineer by trade. So I learned soil and water management. But then at the end of my studies, I gave myself 1 year to study something exciting. And I came to Southampton to do the master's in oceanography. And then I started looking at big water and big ocean floor. And that's how I rolled into mapping the seafloor and the habitats that occur there.
Very cool. So as far as habitat mapping and like seafloor discovery and that kind of thing, what are some of your more recent research or expeditions or that kind of thing?
So we participate in several expeditions, typically one per year or sometimes even two per year. And the recent most ones were to Cape Verde to map some of the island flanks and seamounts there. And then the most recent one was last August in the Wittard Canyon on the Celtic margin, the Bay of Biscay. And we've actually done research in the Wittard Canyon for over 10 years already. We've done several expeditions there, looking at the distribution of the habitats and the fauna that live in a submarine canyon.
Very cool. So as far as some of, when you do those expeditions, what are the some like main questions that you're asking or that you're interested in?
So submarine canyons are very exciting systems. They're very dynamic. They're complex deep sea environmental systems. So you have geological processes happening. You have sediment flows coming through the canyon. You have steep topography. So some of the canyon walls are vertical or overhanging. And that creates a lot of different niches for fauna to live in. You've also got very interesting oceanographic processes with internal waves and internal tides going through the canyon. So all of that creates a lot of dynamics and therefore lots of different communities of fauna that live on the seabed, which makes it very exciting. And some of those communities are considered vulnerable marine ecosystems. So they are built by, for example, cold water corals or sponges, and those create structure also on the seabed, and so they are considered ecosystem engineers. And so those have to be protected because submarine canyons are very rich, and so as scientists, we have figured that out and we are interested in it, but fishermen know this as well, and so submarine canyons attract a lot of fisheries, and that can cause quite a bit of damage sometimes.
Gotcha, super interesting. So outside of those questions, what kind of technologies do you use, like measurement-wise, down there?
Over the years, we've kind of developed a multidisciplinary integrated approach. As I said, there are lots of different processes happening in the canyon, and you cannot really study one thing in isolation. You have to see the whole package, the whole system at once. So we investigate the properties of the water column and how the currents act on the canyon. We investigate the sediment and the sediment dynamics, the geological formations that form the canyon, and then on top of that, where the species live. So for the water column, we use conductivity, temperature, depth systems, but nowadays, increasingly, we use gliders, so a type of robotic systems. To map out the geology, geomorphology, we use autonomous underwater vehicles, so AUVs, to investigate the fauna. We take pictures using ROVs, robotic systems as well. We also take sediment cores, very precisely located using these ROVs. So it's a multidisciplinary, multi-technology integrated approach.
Very cool. So you've talked about some of those processes through the ocean canyons and things like that. Can you give us a little more description on what some of those processes are that people are researching?
So one of the types of processes that colleagues here in the building are studying as well is these sediment flows. Because the canyons have such steep walls, occasionally part of them collapse and then you get a submarine landslide locally, but then that sediment starts mobilizing and then it becomes a turbidity current, so a big cloud of sediment particles and water, and that will just run down the canyon like it would do like a river. And some of those are pretty powerful. They travel at speeds up to 5 meters per second. And the particular canyon that we study is quite far from land, and people always thought that canyons that are far from land, there's not very much happening. But we have, that's another piece of equipment we have. We've put a mooring there that measures current speeds and turbidity in the water. And we found very quickly that 5-6 times per year, there's a cloud of this sediment coming through. And so that has a big impact on the animals, because if imagine you're a coral living on the canyon mm-hmm. walls, and suddenly you get this enormous cloud coming past for a day, that's like, that might choke you, or it, mm-hmm. it's also quite strong current, so it might break some of the coral off. And part of our research is also looking at how the ecosystems deal with that disturbance, because it's a type of disturbance of their environment, and how they can recover from that. Because, as I mentioned before, there is also lots of fisheries happening. Mm-hmm. And so in order to learn how to manage things, it's good to know how natural systems can deal with recovery and how much disturbance they can deal with, and how we can also help the ecosystems recover after bottom fisheries, for example.
Gotcha. That's super interesting. So as far as some of the measurements, you mentioned like there's conductivity and salinity and things like that. What is your favorite to measure and why?
Because my field of research is still habitat mapping.
Okay.
And normally we do habitat mapping by combining maps that depict the topography of the seabed, so the bathymetry. We combine that with maps that show us where the sediments change, sandy, rocky, muddy. And then we combine that with photographs of locations. So the instruments that help us to map out these things, so the topography and also the type of sediment we know from acoustics. We use quite a lot of echo sounders that give us the depth and the strength of the echo return, which is a proxy for sediment type. And then any of the robotics that gives us the photographs of the seabed. People also sometimes use other methods to understand what kind of fauna lives where, but photography is a good one because it's a non-invasive technique. Mm-hmm. We don't have to sample the animal. Occasionally we do sample some to know taxonomy in detail and to also be able to extract the DNA, for example. But most of the time it's not non-invasive, and therefore we can also go back to the same location and then see how the corals have changed over time.
Okay, thank you. So outside of that, you mentioned that, you know, habitat mapping is what you're into in your research. And what struck you as making that where you wanted to go, and what inspired you by habitat mapping?
I've always liked maps. For me, the world is a spatial place. I need to know where I am and how the surroundings are. And I think it's a key, a habitat map is a key document for any person who is thinking about conservation or management of the seabed or of the marine environment in total. Most management is based on area-based rules and regulations. Somebody draws a box like, you cannot fish here and you cannot take any extract any aggregates, or oil and gas can go there. And so you can only do that properly if you know what's there in the ocean. And that's a cliche. We mm-hmm. we still don't know for a big part of the deep ocean. We don't really know what's there. And so I think it's a very good start point. There's a bit of excitement of exploration as well, of course.
Sure. Yeah. That's, I would get super excited to kind of find something that maybe no one else has before. Have you ever had an instance of that?
Sure, we've come across species. I mean, if you do any research in the deep sea, And sometimes they are microscopic worms that nobody has ever described, but sometimes they are corals or sponges or fish or, yeah.
That's awesome. Must be kind of exhilarating. Do you have any future expeditions coming up or things like that?
So, yes, in the coming year I have two expeditions. So the previous one was part of the CLAAS program, funded by the Natural Environment Research Council. Then upcoming one is also studying a submarine canyon, but it's offshore Italy, because there the shelf is super short. So the canyon actually, the head of the canyon comes nearly up to the shoreline. One of the branches of the canyon actually reaches into a fishing village, and the fishermen reach deep water very quickly. So it's a very different setup. And we want to see if the dynamics in that canyon is the same or it's different, how much human impact there is there. I suspect there will be much more marine litter. I mean, this is also one of the topics, right? There is so much rubbish on the seafloor in places that nobody's ever seen the seafloor, but there is already plastic bags and bottles. So that will be a very different setting, but maybe some of the processes, like the sediment flows, are still similar. Okay. And so we're going to go and study that in June as part of a Eurofleets expedition. Good.
And you mentioned there was another one this year too?
In September, October, I will also participate in an expedition offshore the Galapagos as part of the Schmidt Ocean Institute program. And there the research is in some way also linked to what we do in the submarine canyon. We are going to look in detail at fauna communities that live on vertical walls. So we have a lot of vertical cliffs in the canyons, and that's where we started looking at vertical walls. And then offshore the Galapagos, because of the volcanic nature of the islands, there are also cliffs. And so the sediment dynamics and the currents there are different, but still some of the fauna have the same function. And so we want to go and study how that works.
Okay. As far as what are some of the key questions or solutions do you think ocean mapping can provide, whether it be like through policy or management, mitigation, that kind of?
So as I said, nearly all marine management starts with area-based measures, or a lot of marine management is related to area-based measures. And in order to inform that, we need a good map to start off with. We need the knowledge of what's there currently. And then, as I was indicating before, we increasingly start to go back to places and see how things change, also spatially, if certain faunal communities expand, move. So those are some of the questions that marine habitat mapping can answer. I mean, there is also the recent UN Treaty on the High Seas, which aims for 30% conservation by 2030. In order to know where to put those conservation areas, we will need information, and habitat maps are a very good summary document to bring together whatever we know about a place. Yep.
Mm-hmm. For sure, because you don't know what's there, then how can you protect it?
You can protect it. There is the precautionary principle, the idea that we avoid moving into an area and causing harm without knowing what's there. But it's very difficult to motivate people to stick to that precautionary principle if you don't really have something to show for it. You could just draw a massive box and say, okay, we don't go there ever. And for sure there will be certain ecosystems, but it's always better to know what you have in hand. And
gotcha. Outside of, I say, habitat mapping, as far as like the deep sea is considered and research in the deep sea, can you share with us a little bit more about your experience and research with that?
Because there's so much unknown, it's always, and every expedition is a form of exploration. And my research is mainly focused on the seabed, and particularly on complex deep sea environments, like these submarine canyons, vertical walls, cold water coral reefs, and so on. But I think there is also a very large component of the water column. Like, that's all deep sea, that's all an ecosystem, and we know so little about it. It's also more difficult to grasp that water column because a lot of the seabed-related fauna is attached, and so, but the water column, it all constantly moves. So, in addition to the spatial question that I try to answer with my maps, you also have the temporal question because things migrate all the time. So that's a super exciting.
As far as like collaborations concerned in your kind of work, what are some of the things that you collaborate on and work with other researchers regarding habitat mapping?
Marine research, particularly if you start going to deep sea, it's collaborative from start to finish. And I really love that aspect because you work with people from all over the world, with people with different backgrounds. As I mentioned, we try to do a very integrated approach, multidisciplinary, looking at different angles. So it's always interesting to learn about the aspects you don't know that very well. So yeah, being part of European programs, being part of national programs with people in different expertise. Some of the research is more applied, for example, the impact of, we also have projects on the impact of offshore wind farms or how the habitat changes after decommissioning of oil and gas infrastructure, for example. But some other projects are pure blue skies research, like how does a submarine canyon work or how does a hydrothermal vent work.
Are there any technology advancements that you're excited about or things that you think would help you do your job better and your research better?
I'm super excited about all the technology. I have been very, very lucky to work here at the National Oceanography Center because we have a superb group of engineers working in marine autonomy and robotics. And I've had I've been in the lucky position that I've been able to work with them for several years. And we discuss potential solutions to questions. So actually, they helped me to develop the capability of mapping vertical walls using the EchoSounders in an innovative way, both the ROV team and the AUV team. And so we have a lot of interaction. I ask them a question and then they think about the solution, and the next expedition we can try that. So that's super exciting. And I know they're working on lots of different technical solutions still. I think one of the areas that can still be explored a lot in terms of technological development is we are getting better and better sensors to measure what happens in the water column and to photograph or map out what happens on the seafloor. What happens in the sediment, it's the next frontier, I think, for technology. There is a certain amount of acoustics that you can do, but then, yeah, finding out what happens in the sediment is the next one, I think.
Do you have any questions specifically related to the sediment or like what you'd want to know is going on in the sediment?
Partly from an ecosystem point of view or ecology point of view, there's also animals that live in the sediment that are not so easy to photograph. And so, like, yeah, trying to gather composition of benthic communities in the sediment, and maybe we can do some of that with eDNA that we can measure in the sediment pore water or something like that. And then also there is a lot of dynamics also in the sediment in certain places, fluxes of water with nutrients or other components that come from deeper or that go through if you sit on the slope and so on. So those are the parameters that need to be measured as well.
Gotcha. Are there any other like key research findings or things that you'd want to share with people that are new or up and coming?
Key research findings? Well, in the last expedition, the Submarine Canyon, what we learn is that disturbance in the ocean can happen very quickly. One of the sediment flows can come by or a deep sea bottom trawler comes by and everything is disturbed. Recovery happens very slowly. It takes years, decades for ecosystems to build themselves again. But it does happen. We have evidence of new coral growing and in some locations, but it takes a long time. So we should think twice before we add additional disturbance to the deep sea.
Gotcha. And so you mentioned one of the key things is going back to those places. So I guess in a way you can look at when a flow has happened and then kind of what the impacts are afterwards.
That's the idea behind it. But because expeditions take time to prepare, also what happens in the deep sea, as I said, the disturbances go fast, but the recovery goes slowly. So it's a long process. Mm-hmm. It takes years to decades to really document it all. Yeah.
Do you think anything like autonomous robots or things like that will come in handy for some of that research where you can't get back out there with a ship or something like that?
For sure. I mean, we are looking at doing some of that surveying with robots sent from shore. Totally. Yes, exactly.
Gotcha. Yep. All right. Well, thank you for joining me today, Verla. To find out more about habitat mapping, follow the link in the description where you can access the latest edition of Eco Magazine, and make sure to subscribe to Into the Blue on your favorite podcast app to ensure you don't miss out on part 3, coming in October 2023. See you soon.